Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with sharp-eyed Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How you doing?
All right.
So we're doing our Keep, Hold, or Fold podcast on Chris Russell. So we're going to come to a conclusion here after a discussion on his merits and demerits of whether to keep the player, hold, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Or fold, get rid of the guy.
Yep.
So let's start with each with a good thing about Chris Russell. Bruce, what is your good thing?
Well, my good thing is his versatility. And I know a lot of people hate the fact that the Oilers have a left shooting defenseman that play the right side. And I get that. But I also get the fact that right shooting defensemen, capable right shooting defensemen, are not a dime a dozen, and a lot of teams need to have a guy who's capable of flipping, and he's the guy. And it's kind of like having a utility infielder in baseball. You know, he might not be the greatest hitter, he might not be your greatest player at any one of the positions, but the fact that he can move around and fill a hole where you need the hole to be filled, that has value to me. And I mean, would I trade him out for the same guy who shot right? Absolutely. In a New York minute, I would, but I'm not sure that guy is there and readily available. And until he is, he's been the default choice of two veteran coaches, Todd McLellan and Ken Hitchcock, to be the guy that that winds up playing on his offside and trying to survive out there.
So he's the Pepe Frias of the Edmonton Oilers.
That's the guy.
All right, my good thing, Bruce, is I
well paid Pepe Frias, but yeah,
certainly is. And you know, there's if the Oilers get rid of him, Bruce, mm-hmm. which is, and there's a possibility that will happen. They're just going to have to bring in another guy, either probably Caleb. The most likely players to replace him are Caleb Jones and William Laugesen, who kind of alternate playing the left shot demon, who kind of play together, and then they take turns. It seems to me from watching them, they seem to take turns playing on the right. They're kind of interchangeable, right, left side, and they go back and forth. And both of them are pretty damn good at it, especially Jones. And you know, this can work out. Like, I know that this is a kind of a one of these in the modern analytical thinking that this is a real no-no to have that. But we've seen players play for a long time on their offside in defense and have very successful NHL careers. Charlie Huddy comes to mind for every single Oilers fan. He was fantastic. It never even came up that he was playing on the wrong side because he was so damn good at it. And
Randy Gregg, same thing. Craig Muni, same thing.
And Caleb Jones strikes me as the same kind of mobile player who can absolutely get by on the wrong side. Okay, so my good thing about Chris Russell is his defensive smarts. And I know that a lot of people don't like the way he plays hockey, but you come into the slot, you're coming into, that's Chris Russell's turf, and he will shut you down. He is really strong, making that last minute block of the shot, picking off the pass. He'll give you the outside. He'll give you that crappy mm-hmm. shot from the outside every single time, all day long, but he will not let you shoot from the slot. And I really admire that. And I think if you're doing a good job of analytics, you will track that and recognize that in his numbers. And I think it explains a lot about his the variance in his goals plus minus compared to his shots at net plus minus is this ability that he has to limit shots where people can actually score a damn goal. Does a good job of it. So I've always had a lot of time for Chris Russell because of that really smart defensive play that he exhibits. What is your bad thing about
him? He doesn't give up many uncontested shots, does he?
Like he doesn't.
I mean, sometimes it actually gets him in trouble that he gets a little piece of the shot and then that gives the goalie trouble. But he's always in tight area, at least giving the shooter something to deal with. The contract, you know, 4 years, $4 million. That's a lot for a utility infielder. And it's...
Even John Bacabella?
Yeah. It's a lot for, yeah. It's pricey. It's, I mean, he's an established pro. He's got close to 800 games in the NHL. he's like, I think the people who hate the contract underrate the value that the player gives the team. But whether he's worth the full $4 million and for two more years going forward, I mean, it's a term as much as the cap hit that was the issue, the 4x4. And so that's something where if they find a way to move it and replace him with a cheaper player, then they have to look at it. But it's I'll stop there.
Sometimes hard to use that cap space. I mean, you know, they bought out Benoit Pouliot, who really was terrible at that point. Like, he was definitely, for me, he was fold at that point as an NHL player. He was not getting the job done. But they never used the cap space. They would have been way better off just keeping him if they weren't going to use that cap space. And they didn't. So you can buy out a Chris Russell. And well, it's a definite option. But can you find a better player for that cap space? Now, we're going to get into this, but it's a tricky thing to do. So the thing that I don't like about him is he doesn't move the puck very well. And it's partly because he's on his offside, but he's just a number of Oilers defensemen who struggle with this. None of them, except for Sekera, have a real affinity for it. Even Klefbom, I find, is a little bit mechanical and not, especially in the offensive end, when he's making plays in the offensive end under pressure. He rarely makes an exceptional pass or can move into open ice in a smart way. Larson's in the offensive end is actually smarter at it than Klefbom is. And so Russell's near the top of the list, though, for guys who he just plays it safe, rims the puck out, doesn't hit people on their stick with passes, nurses the same. Larson, all of these guys, they just struggle at it. And Benning, and it's killing the Oilers. And for this is why I'm open to him not being around next year, because they're going to have to get rid of somebody or a couple of these guys and bring in superior puck movers. And they have a couple of guys on the farm who are really good candidates for that. So, you know, Russell, he's below average NHL standards, puck moving passes at this point. The Oilers have way too many of that kind of player. It's killing them and they got to do something about it. So that's my bad thing about Chris Russell. What is your number?
My number is Chris Russell did again this year what he's consistently done over his career. I delved into this in a detailed post a couple of years ago. And that is, if you look at his raw on-ice shots result, his Corsi, it's always terrible. This year it was 45.1%. They always had 45% of the shots when he was on the ice, meaning basically for every four shots Edmund took, the other guys took five. So you better be shooting 10% to their 8% if you want to outscore them. It's hard to do. That said, the dangerous Fenwick, which is from our friends at Puck IQ, which rates the actual danger of each specific shot and it rules out the block shots entirely, which, of course, one of Chris Russell's strengths is shots that don't get through to the goalie, shot attempts that don't get through, 47.7%, so significantly closer to 50 than at the Corsi level. And then if you go to goals for percentage, lo and behold, he's at 51%. The Oilers outscored the other guys by two goals with Chris Russell on the ice at even strength. And this is a team that got outscored by 40 goals, David.
And we see this year after year after year with Russell, correct?
To single him out as being the problem when he's the only guy in the top four who's a plus defender, and this is plus by only 5-on-5. We're not dealing with empty nets and shorties and the ones that mess up the traditional plus minus. you know, he's basically a break even player, and not just. I think he gets a bit of a bad rap because some focus too much on these shot shares when really the shot share is just one aspect of what the game is really about, which is goal share.
Yeah, we're trying to predict goal share. We're trying to understand. Yes.
Russell, it's consistently unable to predict it based on Corsi, because as Corsi suggests, he's going to get crushed every next year. You know, when the odds catch up with him, he'll get crushed. Well, and they still haven't caught up.
This is like almost every year in his career we've seen the same.
Yeah, last year he took a dip in the goals for, but his first year in Edmonton was good, and this year was pretty good. You know, I mean, he
So this is the problem with, if you're just using Corsi to rate players, you're going to get
a cash. No, you can't. Like, it's one column. I'm looking at a whole spreadsheet of columns, and that's one of them.
But okay, so Bruce, with it, my number is with our, it's my number is 0.99, which we'll just say one. My number is one. And what we do at the Cult of Hockey is we look at the players at even strength and power play shorthanded, and we look at this is an even strength number one, and it's the major mistakes on grade A scoring chances against. So we look at all the players and how many times do they make some, lose some battle or turn over the puck that leads to a grade A scoring chance right in the slot. And of all the defensemen, Bruce, who played top 4 minutes, tough minutes for the Oilers, Russell had the best number. He made the least rate of those kind of mistakes. He made one per game on average.
And by per game, you're saying per 15 minutes of even strength play, right? Per
15 minutes of each, which is
pretty much a typical game.
So I will say it's per game. So we have Oscar Klefbom, 1.2 per game.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Larson, 1.2 per game.
Mm-hmm.
Darnell Nurse, 1.3 per game.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the guys who played top 4 minutes along with Russell. Russell just won. So he's significantly fewer of that kind of mistake. And the guy is essentially, the guy knows how to shut down. He plays a conservative, safe, conservative game. He limits scoring chances and he shuts them down. That's why he's been able to get by in the NHL all of these games, all of these years, because he's a damn good defensive hockey player. And if you can't see that, well, I think the numbers that you're looking at are blinding you to some extent. Okay, Bruce, let's go with keep, hold, or fold. Where are you with Chris Russell? Keep, hold, or fold?
I'm smack dab in the hold camp. Let's see what we can do. I keep reading in comment sections and stuff that Oilers should just dump. If they can dump Chris Russell's contract for nothing, they should just go ahead and do it. And I sort of understand that. Like, I think at best you can say he's value. But I think his contract has some value. I think they could actually get something for him in a trade, and I think they should be open to that possibility because they do have to open up cap space and they do have to make some room for young players on the back end. But he's not my automatic choice as the first guy to do that, to make room. We already talked about Andre Sekera, and he's another guy that I think you've got to look at. And there may be another one or two on the list of, it's just not necessarily automatically Chris Russell. On the other hand, I don't have him in my keep core player list either. He's in the middle of the pack. He's in the middle of the payroll. He's in the middle of the team. And I guess if you don't like the team, you probably don't like the average player on that team. But I would say that's exactly what Chris Russell is. He's a pretty average player.
Okay, we're in agreement here. I'm in the hold camp with you. Mm-hmm. I lean to, excuse me, the hold camp. I'm kind of lean. I'm not against them keeping him because defensemen always get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He can get by in a top four pairing role. And that's always a useful player on your hockey team, even at his salary, which doesn't, he's not a $4 million player. If he was at $2 million, this would be a really easy decision to keep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's at four. And now here's the thing. He has a modified no trade, no movement clause. So I think that means he can't be sent to the minors. But according to Cap Friendly, the player will submit a list of 10 teams he can be traded to. Now, Russell could, if he wanted to, could submit a list of 10 teams that are capped out and could essentially nullify any legal way, essentially, of trading him, Bruce, except for another big cap hit, I guess, would be the way that would work. But it could be quite hard to move him. That said, a lot of teams can use a veteran defenseman who can get by on a top four role. There's another team that sees him that way. He has trade value. So I think that they could probably move him without eating a lot of salary or giving up much in the way of an asset. Could probably move him for a similarly useful, somewhat overpaid player, a winger or a center, like that kind of, you know, the Chris Russell of centers, a third line checking center.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they can move him for a player like that. So I think that should be explored in terms of a buyout. Let me just go to the buyout calculator.
You save some this year, but next year almost nothing. And then
And then it's a hit. Okay, so this year you save $3 million. And again, the Oilers really do have a lot of young defensemen who I think are capable of making the jump to the NHL. So they have Caleb Jones, William Laugesen, and Ethan Bear. They're all ready. I think they're as ready as they're going to be to play bottom pairing minutes in the NHL to make that jump. Either they're going to do it or they're not really capable of doing it, in my opinion. So they've got three really solid candidates for that, including Jones, who should be penciled in there or penned in on your third pairing, Caleb Jones. That's how strong he's been in the AHL.
And the wild card of wild cards, Joel Pearson.
They have another. They've got a right shot D. So and they've got Evan Bouchard. Yeah. So between Bouchard and Pearson, mm-hmm. they've got two right shooting, strong puck moving defensemen who can run the power play, who could play on the third pairing. They have Jones. They have Bear, who can also run the power play, and they've got Laugesen. All kinds of options that'll be really super cheap for this year. And going forward, so Jones and Bear would have to get paid a bit more in their second year. I mean, after that,
right?
Because they'll be off their ELCs. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about. I think Laugesen might have one more year after mm-hmm. this one on his ELC. I'm not exactly sure about that. Anyway, Bruce, they're going to have some cheap options on defense for coming years. Bouchard's going to be making his move sooner or later, and he'll be a cheap salary in that time period. There's Dmitry Samarukov. So there are all kinds of cheap options on the horizon. So the big savings this year, can they find a forward?
Right.
Can they trade for a forward
mm-hmm.
who's worth the money, who can mm-hmm. play in a top six role, who needs that salary? The answer is yes. Then you move.
Chris. Well, yeah, you could trade Russell for a $3 or $4 million forward that's maybe jammed up on some other team. The Oilers are desperate enough that if they get a sort of decently proven NHL winger, he's probably going to fit in their top six.
But do you buy him out is the thing, and just use that cap saving this year to get a really good
salary? I don't think I'd buy him out because it's only 1 year worth of savings. And then in the following year, you're actually losing money by the time you pay for his replacement. And by the way, Laugesen's expiring next summer, same time as Jones and Bear, because he signed his contract a couple years later. So he only signed a 2-year ELC.
And I think Pearson would be the same thing. Like they'll have to, like all those guys. The only one who will still be on an ELC. The only one.
Bouchard and Samarukov.
Are Bouchard and Samarukov. And they've got 3 years of those guys each being on ELCs, which is fantastic. And it will be huge for the Oilers going forward. To have that flexibility if they can both be players, and that looks to be the case. So yeah, Russell on a buyout. I mean, it's a possibility, but the more likely thing is trading him for a winger
mm-hmm.
Who's also, you know, again, trading him for the Chris Russell of centers or wingers, kind of a third mm-hmm. line, useful third line, two-way player for a team that really needs that kind of player, like the Toronto mm-hmm. Maple Leafs, for instance. Who need mm-hmm. defense or some other team that's desperate for defense. So I'm in the hold camp as well. All right. Let's leave it there, Bruce.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.